Today great. Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
It's a great day to kick off a new season of compelling conversation, creative inspiration, and cultural commentary on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Our summer hiatus in the rear view. Back together, we'll take on that cultural cacophony in measured doses, pay tribute to some luminaries we've lost along the way, creative inspiration, the Inspiration Action Challenge success stories in the mailbag. I love it. You guys have been working hard over the summer, or at least sending out your gratitude. Either or both work for me. Some music to round things out, and we're going to have a fascinating conversation with a woman who's written this phenomenal book, Reexamining the Alger Hiss Case. And we'll talk a little bit about how that kind of resonates today in the Trumpian age. Very fascinating. You'll meet Joan Brady in just a couple of moments. First, though, if you're listening live, it is Tuesday, September 12th. Early start today, 7 a.m. out west, 9 a.m. central, 10 a.m. here in the east. So grab yourself an extra jolt of Joe and let's go. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. 24/7 Twitter Tango, as you know, live or on podcast. Chime in when it works for you at AB Rights. Our producer, Trudy Hard, is in the booth with our social media maven, Aurora. They tell us a Facebook page and our PopNet chat box. That's up and running, too. So have at us the way it works for you. You know the rules, right? We've been away for a few weeks, but you know the rules. The show today brought to you in part by Geico. 15 minutes or less can save you 15% or more on your car insurance. Geico.com is the place for those details. Also by Old Navy. It's time to fall in for seasonal fashions and savings at Old Navy. And our aforementioned pals at PopNet. They're doing a conversation and cultural commentary live, 24/7 on air and online, and they feature select editions of the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. So there you go. All right, let's meet Joan Brady. She's written this great book. It's called Alger Hiss Framed, A New Look at the Case That Made Nixon Famous. And we go back to the notorious Alger Hiss case all the way back to 1948. Alger Hiss was a public figure. He was somebody who was involved in foreign affairs. He was the president of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He was pretty much on the brink. I think a lot of folks thought he would be the next Secretary of State. Stopped in his tracks by accusations made by Whitaker Chambers, who was a known communist, declared Mr. Hiss a communist, and it just sort of steamrolled in the beginning, was the dawn of the House Un-American Activities Committee. It wasn't Joe McCarthy that spearheaded the attack against Alger Hiss, but it was Richard Nixon who would go on to become president. Just a fascinating case and a lot of flimsy evidence that actually convicted Alger Hiss, whereas if you talk about what's going on today with the Trumpian connections and the possible collusion with Russia and how some people in certain sectors of our culture and our society are blasé about the whole thing. Fascinating. Joan, you've written a fascinating book, and besides which, we should also mention you're an award-winning author of thrillers. You know how much we love that. I'm a mystery author myself here. And you knew Alger Hiss, so
very
you are
good.
The right person for this book. So welcome aboard to the show. Thanks for joining us. Perfect timing. The book comes out
you.
Now, I think, in our country. I know you're living in England now. But what took you so long to write it? Because you knew Alger Hiss when you were a young woman.
I knew him for years, but I had no particular feeling about his guilt or innocence or anything else. It's just that I got into some legal trouble myself. I was actually threatened with prison, and I didn't know anybody else who'd ever been in such a situation before. So I started looking, and he was dead by that time, and so I started seeking out my solace online.
Interesting. You talk a little bit about your case. You were threatened. It was some kind of real estate issue, right? In your case, right?
It had to do with a listed building, and what happened was that I was poisoned, and I couldn't. I was trying to get the council to pay attention to the poisoning, and instead of paying attention to the poisoning, they prosecuted me, which sounds like.
Yeah, it sounds like you understood what persecution felt like, right? Is that, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I was completely innocent, and it was just a bizarre, nasty little thing. Nothing like Alger's case, not a bonanza like that, because that was a huge bonanza.
Case. So at that point, you said, "Well, you know, now you just thought about it because you went through your own travails and you got that resolved, right? Fortunately, yes."
Yeah. Well, it took me 8 years, and during this 8 years, one of the things I did was sort of look at Alger's case, and I was really absolutely shocked to find how obvious the setup was, the frame-up was. I mean, it wasn't obvious at the time because the hearings that that really set him up were privileged, and the leaking was done in a very, you know, much more covered way than it can be now. But it was just leaking.
Well, interesting.
I mean, they made it up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You finish your thought, please. I'm sorry.
Well, all I was going to say was that Nixon himself said that he won the Hiss case in the press.
Yeah. And I think you at one point posit the idea that Nixon was the inventor of fake news, right? Which I think is fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. And he was, after all, Trump's mentor. I mean, that's what Trump said. He had modeled his campaign after Nixon.
Yeah, that's scary.
And indeed he had. Oh, yeah, it is scary, because Nixon was, and Trump seems to be stupid, but Nixon was not stupid. He was brilliant.
Yeah, that's right. It's a scary combination that Nixon had, and well, scary. Well, they're both scary. I don't know which is scarier, frankly, but that's another.
No,
that's
I
another...
can quite agree. I'm never quite sure on that question.
But, yeah, it is fascinating, because there are so many similarities between Trump and Nixon, or Nixon, or Trump wanting to emulate Nixon in so many ways, even though Nixon has been discredited, which is so interesting. You know, it's like you want to emulate someone who has gone down that road, but of course, one of his chief confidants is Roger Stone, who was a real Nixon devotee, so much so that he has a Nixon tattoo on his back, apparently. So,
does he really?
Yes, apparently he does. Yeah.
Marvelous.
Very strange. And now there are these rumors. I don't know if you've heard about this, because there's, you know, crazy rumors all the time, and it's coming from the Alex Jones Show, which is this internet InfoWars crackpot conspiracy theorist who's been out there for years, but has come to the fore in the last couple of years because Donald Trump, during his campaign, was actually on that show and actually, I think, has sanctioned this guy's company as a legitimate press source, where they have a correspondent in the press corps. I mean, this is how he's given this guy legitimacy. And now he posited this notion that John Kelly, who's the new chief of staff, is actually drugging Trump to subdue him or something. This crazy nonsense that's out there. And, you know, it's absurd to most people, but, you know, there's a fraction of people that buy it, you know, unfortunately.
There's
and
a
those
fraction
frac-
of people that will buy anything.
Exactly. Apparently, here we are. That's the scary part. But what's so fascinating to me is that people bought with the flimsy evidence against Alger Hiss. He was convicted.
There wasn't any. I mean, it wasn't even that the evidence was flimsy. Yeah. It was not there. There wasn't.
It was just an accusation.
He made it up from scratch.
Yeah, right. So with that.
This is the emperor who had new clothes.
Yeah. Well, that's what we call Donald Trump, that there's the emperor with no clothes, that some people, you know, see clothes when they see them. They buy it. You know, that's what I always say. You know, that's why snake oil salesmen are successful, because somebody wants to buy it. You know, people have to be willing to buy what you're selling, and some people are. Even in the age where we can, you know, and this went on to the campaign, believe me, we talked about it a lot, and you probably got some of it. I know you're in England now. You're American, but you're an expat. I probably didn't get as much news about it as we got here, but the evidence is so obvious, and now people today, the big difference between, as you said, things were done more covered up. Some of the stuff was televised, but it wasn't 24/7. You didn't have the kind of mass.
Not at all. Television was very new back then.
Yeah, right. And no internet, for sure. Now you have everything at your fingertips, and people still chose not to look for it, the evidence, which was there in the case of Donald Trump, which is why it's so interesting to me that there was no evidence in the case of Alger Hiss, yet he was convicted. And with all this evidence piling up against Trump and the campaign and the collusion, there are still a lot of people who, what's the difference? No big deal. So what if they talk to the Russians? So what? Even if they did collude, what's the big deal? I mean, it's so amazing to me, the whole Red Scare that you lived through back then, All those people will be rolling over in their graves, I think. You know, what the heck's going on? Nobody cares? I mean, it's amazing to me. But I'm fascinated on a couple of fronts. I mean, the way the book reads, it's an interesting book because it's part history, of course, and part memoir because you talk about your life and your connection with Alger Hiss. But you never thought about his, when you met him, I know you were very young when you met him.
Well, I just, I
never thought about it?
Why? It seems to me weird, yes, but I have not come to a conclusion. I was not overly fond of him. I liked him fine. I mean, he was a very good friend, and a very good friend to my husband, and a very good friend to me. But he wasn't, I just didn't warm to the man, and I don't know why. I can't say, I mean, he did brilliantly in politics, he did, and he was absolutely a Boy Scout. Maybe that's what bothered me, was the sort of Boy Scoutishness of him. You know, there's a marvelous comment that Richter, the pianist, made, that he liked a bit of spice in his meat.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so you thought he was too much of a straight arrow. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so that made him, I mean, the woman that I contacted in the Russian archivist said her appraisal of him was that he was too banal to be a spy. I think there may have been something in that.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, how he survived it all and came out the other end, and really his life was decimated, and, of course, his brilliance wasn't ever allowed to shine after that. He wound up, he had, like, a job in sales and kind of barely got by, but managed and still was pretty content at the end of his life, and I think said something about you have to look at it differently. The angle that you look at it, was that the quote or something, paraphrasing?
Exactly. That was exactly what he said, and a marvelous comment.
Yeah, it's a fascinating, and it's something that we use in counseling and coaching today. It's like you can reframe things.
You
can't change things necessarily.
Anything, but you can look at it differently.
Exactly. And that changes everything because that changes your outlook and then where you go from here. Exactly. So he was sort of an amateur psychologist too, which is interesting. But yeah, the whole thing is fascinating to me. And obviously you've been working on it for years, so you didn't know when the book. When you started to work on it, certainly that it was going to play into what's going on today in politics.
No, not at all. I mean, there was no Trump at all when I started. He was a jolt from the blue for me as much as for anybody else.
Yeah,
and certainly did surprise me, the similarities, though, and particularly the manipulation of the media. I just find that weird and stunning and scary.
You mean the Nixonian methods that he now uses?
The Nixonian methods and the I mean, it's not all that much difference from saying that the media gets it all wrong. I mean, after all, when Nixon quit, he said, "What are you going to do? You won't have Nixon to kick around anymore," and yet he had manipulated them shamelessly.
He really was brilliant.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say he was brilliant, Nixon, despite all his flaws.
Yeah.
But, of course, he undermined himself. So, in a way, the fact that he prosecuted and persecuted Alger Hiss through these committee meetings, it is interesting that, you know, years later he would wind up on the other end of things. So karma comes back to bite you sometimes because the Watergate hearings exposed his shenanigans and led to his undoing. So things have a way of coming back at you. So maybe that's what Trump is worried about with all the threats to possibly fire Bob Mueller. Or things that I find fascinating is when they say, well, we're drawing a red line. You can't go past this.
Yeah.
You can't look at my taxes. You can't look at my business. And people will accept that. It's like, no, obviously that's where I want to go.
If
you tell me not to go there, that's.
Also, why not the tax returns? I mean, I can't accept that they must show his investments in Russia.
That's the only thing I can think of, absolutely. I mean, I think originally the speculation was that he was lying about how much money he actually has because he tends to exaggerate his wealth and his...
He even admitted
that at one
times.
Point. Yeah, right, exactly. But he even admitted in a deposition that he bases his net worth very often on how he feels that particular day. I mean, he actually said that in court.
Wonderful,
in one particular case. Yeah, it's crazy. So people were speculating that might have been it, or maybe he didn't want to show how much charity or lack of charity he gave to. I mean, they all fight it, or Mitt Romney fought it too, but he eventually showed his taxes, and basically what they showed was he paid whatever the percentage was, and I guess he was ashamed of the fact that it should have been more. I don't know, or people thought it should have been more. But yeah, everybody thought eventually he was going to show it. He never did, except that one thing that
they
leaked to the Rachel Maddow show.
Why can't Mueller subpoena the tax records?
Well, I think they, you know, I don't know either. They say he can, but so far I don't know. Well, maybe he has, but we just don't know about it yet. But we certainly haven't seen it.
Yeah,
I think they can eventually, and they should be able to. And I think there are also speculation or talk about passing a law in Congress that will compel, because it's always been common practice since, I think Nixon did it, I think before, or Ford certainly.
I don't think, and Nixon had a lot of secrets too, financially, so.
Nixon did, but he did, but he did because he was supposedly under audit, but he did, because that was the whole thing. He kept saying, I'm under audit, so I can't do it. But and the IRS said that doesn't matter.
I know, that's marvelous.
Of course, you're under audit, so maybe not show the year that you're under audit, but show the other years that you already finished. But I think Nixon, the story was under audit at one point, and he just still showed them. So, but after, I think from Ford on, everybody it became general practice to do it. Whether it wasn't a law where you had to do it, but now they're, because he refused to do it, they're talking about making a law where future candidates have to. In fact, that was one of the biggest speculations. This guy has been toying with running for president, sort of on the joke front for years, and everybody said there's no way he's going to do it because he doesn't want to put out his financial disclosures. Well, guess what? He did it, and he didn't put out the financial disclosures.
Well, you know, there's one thing that puzzles me most of all, and it is another connection between Trump and Nixon. Nixon was an actor, too. He'd been an actor. And the fact that Trump was in people's living rooms for 15 years, he was their friend. I can't understand why people didn't see this.
Well, you know, I don't get it either. I'm in the New York area, so in New York, he was always a sideshow and a joke in the tabloids, and we knew all about this for years.
Yeah.
But Michael Moore, I don't know if you're familiar with him, who is the documentary filmmaker, an author who lives in Michigan, said where he lives, and he says he urged the Clinton campaign, you know, warn them about this. What they did with it, nobody knows. Not enough, obviously. But that where he lived, people saw Donald Trump, as you said, as the star, as this person they saw on The Apprentice.
Yeah.
They didn't know about the tabloid stuff. They didn't look into it. They didn't care about it. And they liked what they saw on the show, which to me was drivel anyway. But whatever, he presented himself in a certain way.
But they'd had it before with Ronald Reagan, who was the great cowboy and everybody's friend.
Well, he was an actor, but at least that one thing
you'll
say about Ronald Reagan is he was governor of California for 2 terms before he became president. So he did transition.
Yes, you're right about that. He did transition. Exactly. He had
from
some experience.
A B-list movie. You know, he was a B-list movie actor, actually. He wasn't even a star. And he was at one point, he was the president of the Screen Actors Guild. He was actually very liberal and somehow turned to become more conservative, but got into politics and was the governor of California for 2 terms. So there was some legitimacy to his, you know, credibility to his political pedigree, so to speak.
Donald Trump
just ran into it with no experience whatsoever. And I don't think the story is, for most people who knew him, Howard Stern, who was a shock jock here I don't know if you're familiar with him either, who had him on his show countless times, which he said some disgusting things. I mean, it's all this stuff of all the things that he said over the years, not just the Access Hollywood tape that slipped out. But he said he didn't really want to win. He didn't expect to win. It was like a publicity stunt, but every time he figured he's out because he said something outlandish about somebody, from John McCain to Gold Star Families to women, Hispanics, whoever he targeted, a disabled reporter, every time they thought his race is over, it didn't happen. He managed to win the primary. He defeated 16 other candidates. And then he went on and he won. And, you know, my theory on the whole thing, and I did some, no shock to my audience, I did some calling for the Hillary Clinton campaign, and I was worried about it, because even though she was up in the polls by a huge margin, there was an enthusiasm gap, because I knew the people who liked him were going to go out and vote for him. The people who liked her, it was a softer sell. I mean, she still won the popular vote, because we have this crazy electoral college system, as you know.
Yeah.
But
I was concerned about it,
and everybody else said to me, oh, no, everything's fine. And, you know, it's like, no. And that was part of the problem, too. I think there was a complacency on the part of the Clinton campaign, because she was so up in the polls.
Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, that showed all the way across the Atlantic.
Yeah, and there was a complacency in the electorate, because the apathy, since, you know, when Obama ran, particularly in the first time, there were a lot of people who really wanted to vote for him, just like there were a lot of people who really wanted to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
And they would vote no matter what the polls said. But if the polls are so in your favor of the person that you would vote for, but you're not that enthusiastic about, you might say, yeah, she's going to win anyway. And that's what I think happened in a lot of places. They weren't enthusiastic enough where the Trumpian people were lining up because they wanted to vote for him. And they did. And I think that was a real problem. You know, it's not
president.
Oh, it's scary. It's embarrassing. You know?
I know, there's that too. I'm embarrassed as an American abroad. I really am.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it's dreadful. Yeah, I don't know. Well, of course, there was that little hint we had. The Brexit vote was the first sign of maybe something's happening. You know, because
think the two are connected.
Yeah, the
don't
populism,
you through
yeah.
Cambridge Analytica?
I don't know what's been proven, but the idea of it being that the tide is turning, and there's this fear factor that's going out there, this populism that's brewing.
Oh, yeah.
When you're pushing fear and loathing, which certainly Joe McCarthy and Richard Nixon were pushing back in the 40s and 50s.
That's absolutely true. I mean, that was a huge part of what happened to Alger and a huge part of what happened to Nixon. And Nixon dumped it after a while when it got no longer popular. He went in for law and order instead. But it was really extraordinary when you think, were you aware that children as far away as Canada couldn't go to sleep without a light on because they were so afraid of communists?
Wow. Yeah. Crazy.
Amazing.
The Red Scare. I mean, really, the big Red Scare, which was just,
absolutely.
And now we flipped it. Where we have Putin, who is really kind of a nefarious character, is thought of in some circles as he's a good guy. He's a good leader. I mean, the comments that Trump made during the campaign, and still about Putin being a good leader, strong leader, and everything is mind-boggling to me as an American. Just reading history.
No, I agree.
I mean, I'm too young to have lived through that time, but I have certainly read about it and know about it, and it's just. It's fascinating. It's just
I had a cardiologist who had talked to a Washington reporter who'd met both Trump and Putin and said they are both thugs, but Putin is a smart thug. Trump is a stupid thug.
Yeah. Well, that's the question, is Putin using Trump? And that's where that whole collusion thing goes, and that's what was fascinating when you put this case, your case, the Elder Hiss case, in your book, side by side with what's going on today. It's like there's so much evidence mounting. I mean, what they can prove. I know people on the progressive end are saying, when is he going to be impeached? And I'm like, well, they have to build a case, though. And you do have a Republican Congress, so the impeachment part isn't going to come probably until you get a turnover, maybe in 2018, if that happens, with the Democrats, which I wouldn't count on, because the Democrats have a way of, as we've just seen, pulling defeat out of the jaws of victory, so don't count on it, but it could happen.
They certainly did.
But there's so much evidence to this collusion and to something going on that's just not right, and of course that doesn't prove it in a court of law or in Congress, but there's like no evidence, as you said, on the Alger Hiss case, and yet he was convicted. It was like a railroad job, and nobody blinked, and still some people think he was.
Well, what happened in his case, what you do, we're both way too young for Al Capone, but you probably know because of the movies that Al Capone they got for tax evasion.
Yes, right. That's
and
the famous thing.
What you do in when you cannot prove something is charge a somewhat lesser thing that you think you can prove.
Right.
And what they did they gathered huge amounts of information on Alger. I mean, the FBI has there's only 40,000 to 50,000 pages left. They destroyed the rest. But what this does is to give you enough information to hang somebody. I mean, are you familiar with that marvelous Robespierre comment? Write me six. Get the greatest patriot in France to write me six lines on any subject, and I'll find something in them to hang him.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And that's what happened with Alger.
Yeah, I know. It all stemmed from him. Beginning, they were nitpicking on whether he knew who Whitaker Chambers was, which is also ridiculous. I mean, he said he didn't.
Well, the thing is, you have to. This thing just appears in the newspaper. What they do, they might say Amy Beth is a jihadist, and then suddenly you might lose your job.
Right.
It was very much the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
So and so is accused of being a communist, and there would be these whole lists of people. My father is on several of them. So I mean, it just. You would just put these people's names out there, and they would be destroyed. And Alger's feeling was, when they put him out like this, all his friends said, just pay no attention to it, because he was too important, really, for them. And they could put away Hollywood writers and things, but not him. So he dared them, basically. He wrote and said he wanted to deny the charges under oath, and that's when they got him.
There's that Boy Scout thing again, right?
Absolutely, that bloody Boy Scout thing. I really, that was maddening.
funny.
And it went
well,
all the way through
not
the
funny,
trial,
but, yeah.
too.
What? Say
no,
that
I agree. It is funny.
It's funny, but it's sad because that kind of was his undoing. It's like your goodness is your undoing as opposed to people. You know, it just seems like it slipped. You know, the bad people.
No,
it's like,
I quite
it's like
agree.
Trump with his what I call projection deflection. You know, crooked Hillary, lying Ted, everything that he doesn't like about himself,
yeah.
he voiced onto somebody else, and it sticks to the other
yeah.
person, and people or enough people believe it. It's infuriating. And it's, you know, today, of course, is...
Well, there are a lot of angry people around, and they need something to be angry at.
Exactly. They need to blame
and
somebody.
That's
what he played into. That's what
yeah,
I'm saying. It's a
exactly.
thing. Which is the opposite
yeah,
of the
yeah,
Hope and Change campaign that Barack Obama ran. And they always say you go from one to the other. You know, you switch parties, you switch ideas. Boy, do we go from one to the other. I mean, this is the most dramatic change that I can think of, certainly in my lifetime, and I don't
yeah,
know,
it
I'm
really
not a historian. So
well, I think it's about as dramatic as any there has been.
Yeah,
I don't know enough history to be able to say, but it does seem extraordinary that you could go from somebody like Obama to this guy.
It's just amazing, and it's only been several months, and it feels like it's been decades already. It's exhausting to live through it and talk about
it. One of your marvelous late night comics said the presidency is supposed to tire the president, not the populace.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I don't know who that was, Colbert or one of them, because they're all
was,
in it. They're all
I think
they're
actually,
all
I think it was Jon Stewart.
Jon Stewart, okay, yeah. He's not on it every day
yeah.
now though, but yeah, the
no,
the
I know,
late-night guys,
but he was on the Colbert show.
Yeah, he's on Colbert. He's probably kicking. Well, I don't know. Maybe he isn't, because maybe it would be too tiring to go through it every night. But they're on their game, that's for sure. And we can't wait for Saturday Night Live to kick in with Alec Baldwin as Trump. But it's so it's good comedy, but it is tiring and to go on and everybody wants to talk about it all the time. And I always say. I don't want to talk about it all the time on the show, and a listener said to me, no, you have to talk about it, because otherwise, if you disregard it, it's like normalizing it or helping normalize it. And I said, oh, geez.
Well, it's true. And it is the biggest show on Earth at the moment.
Oh, it is. And he plays
and
it like it.
It's
I mean,
all
when
over
he
the English papers.
When he pardoned Joe Arpaio, who is this
detestable
character in Arizona, he said, people said, oh, he's hiding it. He was dumping it on Friday night when news comes out Friday night. He said, no, because we had a hurricane, so I thought the ratings would be higher. I mean, everything's about ratings. Ratings, number of people that show up. I mean, that's all he cares about. I mean, it's just so fascinating the way he is conducting his presidency, you know, and it's...
Well, it's still
yeah.
the boss. It's still, you know,
yeah. Yeah.
that's what it still is.
But he's
is.
Still playing to a finite base, which is also funny, because the base... is, you know, 35 to 40% of the people at the most, you know. And that's
does he
still,
need
you know,
more?
He didn't need more to win, because he lost by 3 million
that's
votes. But he won the Electoral College. He just has to shore up all the states. And they have to work on voter suppression, which they do in terms of in this country, which is a joke. Why, to me, it's a big joke that he talks about the voter fraud, which is why he lost the popular vote. He's
playing
with 3 million fraudulent votes. I'm like, you can't get regular people who are legitimately registered to vote to go vote. You're going to get fraudulent votes in that number? It doesn't make sense. But, you know, they suppress it with, as I
well,
said,
you
the
also
suppression.
Have,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
I mean, I thought that parade in Charlottesville on the Friday night was just plain scary.
Oh, very scary.
You know, with all the tiki torches.
Oh, I know.
Funny, but
even the tiki torch company came out. Yeah, very scary.
Yeah, I know. Even they said, no, we do not endorse this.
Yeah, well, that's the other problem. He doesn't have – he has, I guess, good instincts that he won. He has, you know, people will give him a lot of credit that they pulled it off and he won. Stumbled
yeah,
into it
yeah.
accidentally on purpose, however it worked, with help from the Russians, etc. But his instincts are not so hot when it comes to certain things, like denouncing the neo-Nazis and the KKK, you think would be a no-brainer, but even that was difficult for him to do. And
was it difficult or was it – do you think it's difficult or do you think that this is just what he believes, at least for the moment? I mean
– Yeah. Well, I do, but I think for someone who has calculated – I don't know that he has that much of a belief system, which is why some people think he's more malleable
yes,
than
you're
say,
right.
his vice president,
yeah.
Pence, who was a fright winger but who seems to have more character. It's a question of do you want to, you know, I would say be careful with what you wish for, because if Trump's impeached, it's not like you get a Democrat. You wind up getting Mike Pence, who's very fright wing. I mean, they picked somebody who's really on the right.
Yeah, he's very, but at least he's sane.
Yes, well, that's what I was going to say. At least he's saying he doesn't seem to have a horrible character, and that does matter to me. So Trump, yeah. Regardless of his ideology, which seems to be malleable over the years, he was a Democrat at one point, but he's had some racism runs deep, because in the 70s he and his father were fined for discriminating against African Americans in their housing. So his father was not the sins of the father, but he was arrested at a KKK rally back many years ago in Queens, and of course he took out these huge front full page ads in the papers during the time of the Central Park Five case, which was back in the 80s. These group of young kids, most of them African American, a couple of Hispanics, who were arrested for what they called a wilding event, this gang rape of this woman, it turned out, and they wound up going to prison, and they did confess, I guess, forced confession for many years, and then it turned out they weren't guilty. And he took out these, during the time, and when everybody thought they were guilty, he took out these ads about reinstating the death penalty. But later, when they were exonerated and they won a big settlement, and they're out now, they're grown men, when he was asked about it, he said, well, yeah, they're still guilty because they were convicted. I mean, he doesn't take it back. He never apologizes. He never says, I was wrong. it's just
and in the prejudice, he's like Nixon again. I mean, Nixon was unbelievably prejudiced.
Well, we know that because of tapes.
Oh, very absolutely. Those tapes are disgusting. Well, it's anti-Semitic, anti-black, anti-women, and anti-anything you name it. He's against it. The same thing.
Yeah, well, Trump, of course, they say he can't be anti-Semitic because, his daughter married a Jew and he's got Jewish grandchildren and she converted. So, that's always a defense. It's like the old best friends are, Yeah, it's just it.
Well, my son-in-law is. But, I mean, it's the idea that you can actually endorse a parade that says Jews will not replace us, and screams it, and blood and soil. Really understand what blood and soil is, except a Nazi slogan.
Yeah, I don't know either. I guess blood and soil, or the blood in the soil of the Jews, or whoever you were killing. I guess I don't know either.
I don't think so. I think it was much more had to do with Aryan blood and our soil and that kind of thing. But I don't know.
Maybe
you're
right.
I meant to look it up, but I didn't
do it. Well, that's our homework assignment, folks. Look it up. Let us know.
Somebody else. Because I think it is an interesting point. And, I mean, that way they were screaming along with Jews will not replace us.
Yes. I know. The point was he denounced it, sort of. But he also had to add in there was violence on many sides. Many sides. I don't even know what the many
on
sides
many
would be.
Sides.
I guess the counter-protesters, on many sides, it's both sides. But, okay. And yes, if there was violence on that side, I'm not condoning the violence either, but to say that was what provoked it. And then, of course, he turned it into this whole thing about Confederate statues, which was nothing like that, and said, and by the way, and when he came out the first day, did that many sides thing, got criticized for it, came out with the teleprompter speech, the hostage tape, where he read the thing about the neo-Nazis, but then went into a tirade after that, the next day, because he didn't like how it came off, I guess, that he was forced to say it, he was unleashed again, and he went into the whole thing about there was violence on both sides. Or many sides, and said, and you know it's true, and I know it's true, and you know it's true. And I was like, no, we don't know it's true. And he said, and by the way, these people, the protesters, had a permit. Yeah, they had a permit. That's right. So the neo-Nazis got a permit. Whoop-de-doo. They did their paperwork. That doesn't make them right. And it had nothing to do with the Confederate statue.
No,
it was the Chamber of Commerce arguing about Robert E. Lee's statue being taken down. That's ridiculous.
Well, also, I understand that the Robert E. Lee statue wasn't actually erected until the 60s and the protests then. It was erected to stop the voter registration, as a protest against voter registration in the South.
Yeah, that's part of our, unfortunate history. It's part of our national albatross, this racism and
But Lee himself didn't want any statues or want any memorials at all. He thought the nation should be healed rather than split. Once they'd lost, they'd lost. That was it. He actually made a statement.
That's very true, and it's heartbreaking that people talk about it with our heritage, and it's your heritage, but your heritage that side lost, and what they were fighting for was not a good thing to fight for.
Well, I think also if you just think of it, one was fighting, Washington and Jefferson were fighting to unite the nation, and Lee was fighting to divide it. I mean, you don't even have to go into the slavery issue to make a real point of that, I think.
I think you're right. I mean, that's the clearest distinction. But Donald Trump, with all his talk about how great his education is, and he went to the best schools, and he did really well there, and all that stuff, he doesn't seem to have a good grasp on history, and he doesn't have a. He always talks about he's got the best words, but his vocabulary is really, really limited to putting in a lot of huge, great, wonderful, really, really big. You know, he says the same. I think they've
and sad.
Done a study on it. So he's got the most limited vocabulary of any president, I think they've come up with. So every time he says he's better, best, hugest, it's not, you know, so it's, but he's a little boy.
No, I think in many ways he's kind of sad, and it does seem to me as though it might be an incipient Alzheimer's or something, because some of it is really quite odd. Some of what he says is just plain odd.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
I mean, maybe
really make sense.
You know, I don't know if it's just that or just he's just not that smart. And it comes through. It's easy in sound bites, but when you really have to do something and know what you're – I mean, even with the health care bill, he's mad that they didn't win. We didn't get a win, but what you promised during the campaign, of course, wasn't going to happen. It's going to be big, beautiful, less expensive, better than you have now, you know, promising this, you know, pie in the sky, which is not reality. And then when it came time to deliver, all he cared about was
he had no intention of delivering it.
Right, because
he
didn't think he was
going to
win.
It just wasn't even, the way he formulated it, it wasn't going to help anybody but him and his rich friends.
Right, but that's my
really
point. What I'm saying
heavily,
But he's complaining about the fact that he didn't get the win. He's mad at Congress, and I was like, well, make it better. Maybe that, I mean, those three holdout votes and the Republicans, McCain, Murkowski, and Collins, are heroes.
Yeah, that was quite a scene.
Yeah, this is not a good bill. What I'm saying is if you want to repeal, I mean, his whole thing is he just wants to get Obama's name off everything because Obama's his big nemesis. You know, he can't stand Obama. For whatever reason, Obama, he was the one that persecuted Obama with this, you know, business of the birther movement, which is what launched him for 5 years. But Obama is popular, younger, more attractive, more eloquent, all of those things.
He doesn't
like Obama. You know, but that's against him, so he doesn't want to go by.
I think it does seem just plain old-fashioned jealousy.
Yeah, that's what I mean, it's jealousy. But he just wants to get his name off of it. What I'm saying is make the bill better then. They've had 7 years, Congress, the Republicans.
But he doesn't want, you see, the thing is, what he wants to do is to get the money, more money for the rich.
Right.
And that, if he does, and in order to do that, he has to get rid of the money for the poor. I had a friend who was talking about the first uses of social welfare, and her point was you mean make public money available to the public? Scandalous. And you see, that is his situation. That's what Trump is saying. Make more money available to the public? Scandalous. We need it
except
for the rich.
But he's not saying it because that's not what his message was.
Well, no, he's not actually saying it out loud, but
so
that's what his bill does.
No, I know it does, but what I'm saying is he's not even about that so much. The Congress, the McConnell and Ryan are about that, but he's more about, I just want the win. He doesn't care he'll sign anything.
Yeah.
As long as he takes Obama's name off of it, he just wants the win. But I'm saying,
there.
You want the win, but the win is going to come back to bite you when people realize they're really losing from the win. Make it better. You know, I don't think Obama would care if you take his name off it. Make it better, and improve it for people. Otherwise, it's not going to be...
But you can't present it in 5 bullet points.
Right.
So
well, that's all he can do. That's his attention span. That's the problem with him. He doesn't read. He's the first, president who doesn't go read his briefings, but he doesn't like to read too much. He likes to watch TV a lot, obviously, and watch his coverage. They have the propaganda briefing every morning and night. The good news, you heard about this, the good news folder?
Yes, I have. That's wonderful, I think.
In the morning.
Marvelous.
First thing in the morning and the last thing in the evening, they present him all the good news about him. And if there's not good news, they have to make up stuff, I guess, or put good-looking photos of him. this really is...
It's hilarious, really.
It is the toddler presidency. Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was doing this book about Alger, I first thought of doing it as a piece of fiction because I thought it would probably do better.
But
I realized that some of it is so absurd that you couldn't do it as fiction. And I think the same thing is going to be true of this presidency. If anybody who, you know, writes about it can't write about it as fiction, it's just too absurd.
Well, I was going to say, they make it hard for fiction writers, although a couple of people have tried. I understand Salman Rushdie's new book is kind of based on Trump, although he doesn't use Trump's name.
Really?
He calls him the Joker. He calls him the Joker, and he has, I think he says, I saw a snip of an interview with him, that he has green hair or something in the book. It's called The Golden House, I think.
Good.
I don't know. We'd have to look it up and see. I haven't read it yet, but I think people have tried, but it's going to be hard, yeah.
Yeah.
And why would you want to at this point write about it? Because it's playing out in real time, you know. Maybe later.
I think that's true. I mean, wait a little while. Wait until something. And it does seem as though it's going to be something sort of cataclysmic now. What with North Korea and.
Oh, that's scary. That's very scary.
That's seriously scary, and I don't know what anybody can do about that. And Trump is the only one who can actually decide to stick his finger on his red button.
Well, they tried. That was also one of the things that the Clinton campaign tried, to have the scare ads, like they tried with Johnson and Goldwater, but it didn't fly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were on relentlessly about, would you want this man making the decision because he's so erratic? But they didn't buy it, and there's, you know, I'm sure this is going to be a big discussion among historians for decades about how that happened and why it happened.
Oh, yeah.
Today happens to be the day Hillary Clinton's book, What Happened, drops officially, and she's making the rounds. You know, she's in a no-win situation, I think, because she does have to, you know, shoulder some of the blame, obviously, for her ham-handed campaign. There's no question, but there were forces against her, and anytime she mentions those forces against her, people come out and say, why isn't she taking the blame herself? I mean, you know, it's not mutually exclusive, is what I'm saying, and I can't imagine she's not admitting, you know, taking some of the blame herself. But there were things that.
Well, I don't see how anybody could not in her position. I mean, have to, but then to some degree, you don't know at the time. I mean, you can't. She couldn't have known all of what she was doing, otherwise she wouldn't have done it.
Right, of course.
If you see what I mean, it's not very sensible.
Oh, of course, absolutely.
Phrases.
No, you're right, but she's just not a natural campaigner, and she got some bad advice along the way, and I think they just got very complacent because those polls had her winning by a, you know, astronomical margin to a landslide.
Oh, a huge margin. But it did narrow quite a bit toward the end.
Yes, it did, but it was too late at that point, I guess. But she got too, I think, you know, I don't want to say lazy, but they just got complacent. They really thought they had it in the bag kind of thing, and there were things they could have done in some of those the few states that turned and made the difference, you know, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania.
Do you have theories about why Comey came out when he did with the email
thing? I don't know. Comey's another one who's an enigma. I mean, you talk about Boy Scout, he's a Boy Scout, but he really, I mean, that's the rap on him. But he came out when he exonerated her, sort of exonerated her. I mean, said they weren't prosecuting, but then, you know, had to give a big speech, which is unusual too, about why, you know, she was very they were very reckless with the surfer or whatever when they first exonerated her. I'm talking about the emails, of course. And that, they said that's very unusual. Nobody does that when they're not prosecuting. They just say we're not pursuing the case. It's a one-liner kind of thing. But he delivered a speech on it. Then it was dropped. And then he resurrected it again, like 10 days before. We found possible emails, new emails on the Anthony Weiner laptop, which everybody knows was confiscated because he was involved in the sexting scandal, and he was the wife, he was the husband of Abedin at the time. And then it wound up being that they weren't even new things. It was redundant, and they happened to be repetitious, you know, copies of things that were there. So it wasn't anything new.
Seemed bizarre that he did that.
It seemed very bizarre, and the truth is, and she said this, and she's right, at the same time that her case was closed and then reopened and then closed again quickly in a few days where they said, oh, yeah, nothing to see here, but by then people were like, oh, what, resurrected it again in people's minds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They had the active investigation going on with Trump and his campaign colluding with the Russians. Had that come to the fore in the same manner at the same time, maybe that would have made a difference. We don't know. I mean, again, you never know.
It might well.
But he just claims he didn't do that because it was an active investigation and you don't comment on active investigations. So that didn't make sense either. It's like, what? But the reason why he resurrected the Hillary Clinton campaign was because it was closed and he promised that if it was reopened, he would have to announce it was reopened. So I don't understand it. In his mind, it must have made sense. But to most of people, it didn't make sense. And then, of course, I guess Trump liked him at that point because it helped him. But then when he was pursuing the Russia investigation after Trump became president, he didn't like him for that, and that's why he fired him. Which may have come back to bite him, too, because that's how they got Robert Mueller. Because the investigation, you know, this is why Trump is not so smart. He doesn't realize that just firing this one guy doesn't mean it's the end of it. So, if they fire Mueller, it's not going to be the end of it either.
there's got to be something slightly wrong about a guy who's had to go bankrupt four times and still claims to be a billionaire. I mean, there is something really wrong with his finance capacity.
I would think so. And it's something really wrong. I think the thing about it that I guess amazes me is this is the first election, I think, that I have actually – I mean, I'm a pretty liberal Democrat. I think I've always voted for a Democrat, maybe occasionally on a local level voted for a Republican, but certainly for president. No surprise to people who listen to my show, know me. But this is the first time, though – well, I can respect people for making a different choice, is what I'm saying. This is the first time when people admit they voted for Trump, I have like, really? Because you voted for Bush, you voted for Reagan, you voted for whoever. Okay, I don't think Bush was a great president, but I don't think he was a horrible person. You know what I'm saying? This is like there's so much evidence here before the election and for so many years that Trump is a deplorable person. The way he conducted his personal life, three marriages, noted philandery. The financial situation, all of that, and his policies and the comments he was making throughout the campaign. I mean, I'm just saying, there was nothing that was enough to push you over? I mean, what's so bad about Hillary? I mean, when people said lesser of two evils, I'm like, really?
Was a woman. That was what was so bad.
Well, that's the other
thing.
I think
people were really looking for a way out.
I think there's an awful lot
of men really hated the idea.
I think you're right. That's an incipient sort of, misogyny there. I mean, I know one guy who's an older gentleman.
Oh, I think it's really... it was huge. What was it Shirley Chisholm who said that being black was far less of a hindrance in her Senate campaign than being female?
Well, yeah. Well, there you go. We see that as proof because Obama won first. We got a first black president before we had a first woman. I mean, she has other issues, no question.
Oh, yes.
And they will dance around that by saying, oh, I don't mind a woman, but I don't like her, that whole thing. But, I know a gentleman who's an older gentleman in his 70s who voted for Obama twice, still praises Obama, but voted for Trump. He said, I voted for Obama for change. I voted for Trump for change. I said, well, the problem with that is, you're voting to change the things you like that Obama did because that's what Trump is. So if you still like the things that Obama did, he's kind of upend them. So I think there's something, incipient misogyny there that he's not copping to or isn't aware of.
I think it's very deep.
I mean,
when you think there's Angela Merkel and Theresa May, and I mean, you may not care for her policies. I certainly don't. But Angela Merkel, I mean, there are a lot of these women in Europe that actually lead.
Well, they have a different system,
Europe,
right? Because
it's a different system, but there's also a lot less misogyny, I think.
Really? That's interesting. Fascinating.
Or a lot. It's hidden in the U.S. It's really deeply hidden, but it's really deep.
But it's not hidden with Trump. He's an open misogynist, and still he won.
No, not at all. I think that's
he won the vote of women. That was the shocker. He won white women went for him. Yeah. Voted for him 52%. And after the comments that came out, I can't believe it. I'm stunned that he won that. And that's what I'm also saying. I think that nobody thought nobody in the progressive bubble thought that this would happen because nobody would, all these demographics, everybody assured me, I don't know these demographics, there's no way he can win. Well, there is a way if you suppress the demographics and people don't vote. That's the point.
Yeah.
They weren't voting. A lot of people didn't
vote
for him. They just didn't vote for at all. Or they voted for Jill Stein, which is throwing your vote down the toilet, or Gary Johnson, whoever.
Yeah.
So it's on us. It's on the electorate. And I'm just saying for people to not vote because you say one thing about the Republican end of things, they mobilize people. And they said, we want to get Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. Hold your nose and vote for Trump for people who thought that he was offensive, I guess. But for the progressive end.
Well, I think also you have to bear in mind that the Republicans went for the for the other vote. I can't think of its name at the moment. What's that other vote called? The one where all the states, where they have chunks of people, as they did in the, how stupid.
The Electoral College or something?
The Electoral College, that's what it is. Yeah.
Right.
They went to capture the Electoral College, and that's what they did. But that's the thing about this Cambridge Analytica that actually found the the Rust states and went after them with this marvelous algorithm. That it targeted. They have 5,000 data points on every American, and they go after.
Wow.
They went after voters individually, which I think is really extraordinary. And apparently, they were behind the Brexit vote too. So you had the two things.
Interesting. Well, the thing that was curious about Brexit shows that there are idiots in England, too, no offense.
Oh, yes.
Well, you can claim idiots on both sides
of
the Atlantic. No, but
idiots,
what I thought was so funny were people were Googling Brexit after they voted for it. After the fact, they were like, well, what
I
is
know,
it? I mean, yeah. They had buyer's remorse, but they didn't even know what they're voting for. I mean, it's like, figure out what it is before you vote
for
it.
And they didn't know. Well, it would be a good idea, and I didn't know what the EU was either.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think basically it was an anti-immigrant vote. It was the same thing. You know,
that's
it was
what
the
it
same
is. Right.
Racial profiling, hatred.
Right. That's what they're playing into, exactly. And it's
absolutely.
And nobody thought that would happen in 2017, but it did. So it's we're stuck with it now. We're stuck with the consequences. And it is about the electorate, and it's about, you know, so I always say it's not just so much about Trump, who's horrible, but it's about what does his election say about us that we voted, you know, that the country let him win, and there were enough people who did it. And as I said, my reaction to people when they say they voted for Trump is, you know, really? So I'm not saying, because they
what
always
say,
people get defensive. People say, people get defensive. Well, people say, if they admit it, a lot of people don't admit it, they'll couch it by saying, well, the people that voted for him wanted to shake things up. This is their whole thing. They want to shake things up. I'm like, well, first of all, you can't just shake things up. And his idea of draining the swamp is to put in, you know, more billionaires and people who have no qualifications to take the jobs.
More swamp.
I mean, you know, more swamp, but worse swamp in a way. It's just ridiculous. But a lot of people don't admit it, but they dance around it. But some people will admit it, and they're just saying, well, because I don't, you know, like his policies, or they're very vague about it because you could tell they didn't do their homework. And then, but when people are defending in general, saying, well, you can't call everybody who voted for Trump racist or misogynist or anti-Semitic, I'm like, I'm not saying they are, but none of those things alone, each one of those things might be a deal breaker, but collectively, everything that he stood for would have been a big deal breaker in my mind. They overlooked it. That was okay to not vote because they didn't want to vote for Clinton or whatever. Yeah.
There's another point that somebody made, I can't remember who, is that it isn't a voter base, it's a fan base.
Yeah.
And that's quite a different thing.
Yeah, well, that's what it is with
I wish
him.
I could remember who
fact,
said it. Yeah, and that you're not going to shake.
No. That's the hardcore people. There are people that voted for him that were holding their nose and are not. It's not as solid. But there's a 30%, 35%, or whatever. They're solid and they're going to vote for him.
Yeah.
Those are the people that he said during the campaign, I could walk down Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and they'd still support me. And there are people that are with him. They don't care what he does.
Oh, absolutely. But I think the thing, it is important to realize that he gives them stardust. He shelters, you know, he's their friend. He's been in their living rooms for 15 years. They know him.
Well, that's why they talk about now going crazy and like, well, we got to put up, you know, Tom Hanks or George Clooney or some, you know, kind of person. I think we realize that we have to get back to people who might know what they're talking about. That's my advice. But
that's
nobody's
your,
listening.
That's your prayer.
That's my prayer. Exactly. That's my prayer. It's just, it's crazy. But there are, as we, you know, circling back to your book on Alger Hiss, there are this, you know, it's just so interesting how the times change and yet the same things come back up and the same forces
are
at play.
Well, I do think the comparison, another comparison you can make, are you familiar with Arthur Miller's The Crucible?
Oh, yes, of course.
Play?
Yes.
Well, the witch trials, very much the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
And did you know? Most amazing thing, that the 20 who were hanged were not declared innocent until 2001, more than 300 years it took them to declare these people innocent.
That's amazing. Wow. Talk about justice delayed, right?
Delayed, exactly. So,
we really do have so many pockets of, so many black eyes in this, in our.
Yeah.
I know they always say this is the best system on earth, but it still needs a lot of work, that's for sure. And unfortunately, we're going in the wrong direction right now. I hope we can move in the right,
certainly,
you know, right the ship at some point. But some things might be irreparable. I mean, the whole climate change issue, which, you know, is just frightening.
Well, that, I think, that's incredible. I mean, that you could deny that, particularly after all these storms and things.
Yeah. Well, that shouldn't be. That's why things have become so strange to me, because why is that why is science a partisan issue? you know, fact is fact, and that's the problem with the alternative facts. That's the problem,
Well, you do have, one of the things that unites England and America is a very strong anti-intellectual strain. And You know, it really, yeah. it's bad in both countries. It really is. I mean, other countries are much better. I mean, as a writer, I go around from time to time and I speak to people in other countries, and I get some respect from those people. You don't sense that here or there.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's almost like willful. I mean, with the election, I would say it's like willful ignorance. Like I said, people didn't even want to know about things that were easily attainable,
well,
the facts about Trump. You know, we don't want to know about it because
it
hurts our delusion. Yeah. Well, no, not only that, but also if we knew, and I have to admit it, you know, yeah.
Well, there's also, do you know this marvelous quote from Bertrand Russell? Most men would rather die than think, and many do.
Oh, I like that. That's interesting. Yeah,
it's
but it's also, it's an interesting one. I don't think it's, I think people didn't want to be, they don't want to know the truth. And they dismissed everything he did, and if you asked it, they pressed people on it, they say, the Trump, some hardcore Trump supporter, oh, he's an entertainer, oh, everybody lies, or the media lies too, or they, you know, it's always the Me Too thing. Somebody else does it too, so it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, every politician lies, and yeah, the media doesn't always get it right. I get all of that, but he has lied more, I mean, this is an outsized number of lies that this guy has told and continues to tell. And
oh, it's just,
I think
it's
pathological.
I found somewhere a list, or not a list, a chart showing on which days he had not lied.
Was there any day there on the chart?
It's lovely.
It's a question of the number of lies each day. I'm sure every day there's some kind of lie.
Yes.
I mean,
yes, they did put the numbers in too, but the main thing was that there were so few days on which he hadn't told a lie.
Yeah. Well, I bet he just wasn't caught those days. I think he can't help himself. I mean, he just, and the whole family's in on it too. That's the other part of the whole entourage, that if he's gone, would be nice to leave, you know. And the amount of money we're spending on their security to follow them around on safaris and business trips and all kinds of nonsense.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
He's getting a profit on this because we're paying the Secret Service to guard him in Trump Tower. So who's getting paid? They're paying rent to Trump. I mean, it's just, you know, really, you can't make this up. I mean, if you did make it up and
no,
it didn't really happen in real time, they'd tell you this is too ridiculous.
No fiction editor would accept it.
Exactly. That's what I mean. You can't buy this. This is even too absurd for absurd fiction or whatever. Mind-boggling. It really is mind-boggling. But you came out with the book at the right time because I think you can make parallels here and you'll get more mileage on it. But it's so fascinating because you have that personal angle too. And I think people, if they read it, it's not just a straight history case. It's your story about you and your marriage and your connection with Alger Hiss. I'm just fascinated by the fact that you didn't really think about whether he was innocent all that time. You didn't really ask him about it.
I didn't care. Husband didn't know and didn't particularly care either.
He didn't care.
I think he was more doubtful than I because I saw the Boy Scout quality. I mean, I couldn't really quite see Alger as a spy. He just didn't look like a spy. But then I'm a very bad judge of character, and I don't think, you know, so I sort of trusted husband's judgment that
and
it just
went along with it.
And you
still liked him.
Yeah, why not?
That's interesting.
Well, he was a very good friend. And I mean, he stood by us, and it was, you know, he was a good friend. But I don't know. I really, when I started this, I rather hoped I would find he had been a spy. It would have been really rather a bit more fun.
Definitive proof of the spying area. Well, this way you're clearing him a little bit.
I mean,
and,
I knew a spy. That would be more fun, sure, than an innocent man.
No, I don't know. Either way, it works, but it's a fascinating book, so I think people will enjoy reading it on a variety of levels, so you got that going for you.
So
Alger Hiss framed a new look at the case that made Nixon famous. Joan Brady, thank you so much for joining us today. I wish you the best. Oh, I know, we'll post you do have a website, and I will post the links as I always do with the podcast. It's joanbrady.co.uk, but I'll post it for our listeners. Yeah, I noticed you're on Twitter, but you don't go there too often, I noticed. So the last time you were there was like 2 years ago.
No. No. I don't know. I think Trump is enough to put me off it.
I don't blame you. I understand what you're saying. Listen, a pleasure talking with you. I wish you the best with the book, and thanks for joining us. Okay,
Joan? Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Amelia. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, again, Joan Brady. I'm sorry. It's Alger Hiss framed a new look at the case that made Nixon famous. Reach out. Twitter feed is AB Wright's phone line, 347-857-4505. We're back in session here on the Amy Beth Arkaway Show. On the Amy Beth Arkley Show, I'm Candace Joan Brady. Fascinating conversation and those parallels between the Alfred case and the Trumpian world. How much evidence do we have now against Trump and his campaign colluding with the Russians? Fascinating indeed. Twitter feed is AB Wright's. Phone line is 347-857-4505. Trudy and Aurora tell us the Facebook page is open, as is the PopNet chat box. So let's get down to business, as they say. Lyra says, hey, great show. Checking in now. Glad to have you back live. Well, thank you, Lyra. Olga, oh, my God, Russia mocks U.S. intelligence for sleeping while Russia elected Trump, not even hiding it anymore. The Trump-Russia connection is big indeed. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's all that talk about getting Donald Trump Jr., to testify live in front of Congress. He was behind closed doors a couple of times last week, most notably, to again kind of put out his story about why he met with the Russian lawyer. Was it about getting dirt on Hillary Clinton, or was it about adoption? And he, I think, came out with a statement that was obviously crafted by a lawyer that said that he thought it was his obligation to meet with them in case there were some issues about character and fitness to be president that would come out. Hello, Donald Trump's son, right? Too funny. Donald Trump met with a Russian who set up Don Jr.'s meeting during the campaign. It's a fact. Really? I don't know if that's a fact, but okay. Again, some of this stuff is, are people wishing this, speculating on this, or is this some documentation on this? I think there's so many things that are out there. It's sort of like putting a puzzle together. It looks like the evidence is there, but it may not be complete enough for Robert Mueller to make his case. It may not be complete enough in a court of law. It may not be complete enough for an impeachment hearing. Those are the things we have to keep in mind. As much as we believe it to be true, we know it to be true, it doesn't mean it is true, or that it will come out in that fashion, if you know what I'm saying. Omar says, no border wall, we need a firewall. Cyber warfare hacked our election, and now more Equifax accounts, too. Is the GOP finally ready to talk? Mm-hmm. People are out there wondering about all these things. What about you? Twitter feed is AB Wright. Phone line is 347-857-4505. So while we were gone, some luminaries passed on, including one of my favorites, Louise Hay, the self-help guru, who kind of launched the self-help movement in so many ways, and the idea of affirmations, the idea that you can, the way you embrace your life and reframe things. We were talking about reframing, looking at things at a different angle, and putting affirmations and positive feelings and intentions in the universe can actually change your life. You know, her famous groundbreaking book, You Can Heal Your Body. Later, she had a book called You Can Heal Your Life. I started Hay House, which was a self-help clearinghouse of books and tapes, and a lot of people, including the late Wayne Dyer, were involved in that. She passed away at the age of 90, so as they said, she transitioned. Louise Hay had a profound influence on my life and work, and the work of many of my clients and students, so she will be missed. But that work, it can do things, powerful things for you, if you work it. It's like anything else, right? Have to embrace it. And sad to say that we lost, also Sam Shepard passed away, the great Pulitzer Prize winning, you talk about groundbreaking, playwright, Buried Child, which won the Pulitzer Prize and other plays, sort of turned the theater world on its head and influenced so many authors, playwrights, and audiences. He was also a great actor. He had that quality, that vulnerability, that authentic vulnerability that, you know, seeped through into his work, both as a writer and as an actor. Didn't know he was suffering with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, horrible disease, passed away. Also was a longtime companion with actress, Oscar-winning actress Jessica Lange. They had three children together, but had broken up a few years ago, so that's sad. But he was surrounded, apparently, with family and friends at the time of his death. So his work, certainly ever-changing for so many folks, lives on. And a couple of musical luminaries passed away. One was Walter Becker, the quiet half of Steely Dan, with the long hair and the beard. Very rarely heard him talk, but why did he play a mean guitar? Passed away at the age of 67 just last week. And it was his compadre, Donald Fagen. They made some great music. Quintessential 70s sound. What did Rolling Stone call them? The anti-heroes of the 70s. And they all great music. Among my favorites, for sure. Remembering Walter Becker, here's one from Steely Dan. It's Haitian Divorce on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
Thing.
period. Billy Dan classics, Asian Divorce. Paul Fega and the late, sad to say, Walter Becker. Great guitar and bass moves of his. This is the Amy Beth Berkley Show. Twitter feed a buzz. You guys are on the early side. I love it live. Renee chiming in. Great to have you back listening live. Good interview with Joan Brady. We'll check out the book. There you go, Joan. Getting you one reader at a time. We love to do it that way. Dottie says, hey, great. Welcome back. Love the new show. Well, it's not a new show. It's a new season. Yeah. Okay. I know what you're saying. Kiri says, listening. Love it. Thanks for doing the show, as always. Good interview. All right, thank you. And Johnny Fever's hangover, listening to part of it live. We'll catch the rest on podcast. Yeah, well, don't forget, all the shows are archived as such. You can follow the Amy Beth Berkley Show, a slew of places, BTR site, Mixcloud, Stitcher. We're on download on iTunes, NetNow. And all roads, of course, lead back to our website, amybethberkley.com. We'll post Joan Brady's info, too, along with the podcast when it becomes available. Happy to have you guys along live on this early start. Maybe we'll do it earlier. We'll play around with the time. We'll see. But, you know, you can listen anytime and connect with us. On to the other stuff that we're talking about today, and people are big on this, the Trump business. Jinjin says, breaking Representative Devin Nunes' efforts to sabotage the Trump-Russia deal, backfiring bigly. Yeah, what's with Nunes? He was the chairman, or he is the chairman of the Intelligence Committee on the House side, but remember he was the one that went in kind of down to the White House to tell Trump about the investigation. He was kicked off, said he wasn't going to be in charge. They have a new guy who's in charge of it. But he's back in the news somehow, trying to sabotage the investigation again. It's crazy. You can't do it that way. You can't get away with it now. It's too much out in front. And even if you do it, somebody else will take over. And that's like the idea where they're dangling the idea that maybe Trump will fire Mueller. Well, if he fires Mueller the way he fired Comey, there's just going to be somebody else taking up that investigation. And if he pardons all these people, which is now the speculation since he pardoned Arpaio, that hideous racist sheriff, then there's talk about state charges in Washington and New York, the state's attorney general is getting involved because, hey, the president only has purview over federal charges. So does that mean that Flynn and Manafort and that hallowed Jared and Don Jr. and all those people will be safe? He's certainly running like an imperial presidency. They used to say that about Barack Obama with his various executive orders. This has gotten out of control because, you know, as we were talking about with Joan earlier, the idea of Mike Pence is not exactly palatable to me because he is right-wing, so be careful what you wish for in terms of ideology. But when we talk about character and we talk about moving things along in a way that makes more sense, he's definitely cut from that cloth, and I can see it more gritting our teeth, no doubt, not being thrilled with his policies, not being thrilled with his choices, as the Supreme Court say. But we're not thrilled with Trump either, because Trump, of course, Trump can go rogue, as he did go rogue briefly with Senator Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, Minority Leader Pelosi last week, making the deal with the debt ceiling. But it's a temporary deal, and it may give leverage temporarily to the Democrats, but who knows? Again, what will they do with it? My question about the Democrats is still a little dubious. I'm not sure what they're going to do, but we'll see what happens. Hillary Clinton's book, as we mentioned, What Happened, is out today officially. She's been making the rounds. We'll continue to make the rounds. She can't win because if she doesn't take full blame, people are mad at her for even suggesting that somebody else is involved, like Comey. And Bernie Sanders, she takes pot shots at. I'm not so sure I agree with that. I mean, I agree that Bernie may have stoked certain things, but she did make those speeches and get paid a bunch of money when she knew she was going to run for president. She says she didn't know, but she knew. She knew she was pretty much going to do it. And the only time you take that kind of a bounty of money for speeches is if you know you're definitely not going to run, because I'm sure Condi Rice and John Kerry and other people have done it, and they're not running, so that's okay. So if your calculation is I'm probably going to run, not just I might in a long shot chance run, I know the idea is tempting to get that greed grab in. But she did make a mistake with that, and she made a mistake with the server and handling it, all of those things. Not necessarily insurmountable, but she did do them. She takes a shot at Bernie for setting the stage for Donald Trump to do the crooked Hillary campaign. All right. But, you know, in the primary, I'm saying we can have lively primaries. My problem is not with Bernie Sanders so much. And, yes, he made the pie-in-the-sky claim that he could do everything, you know, and give you a pony and give you, you know, sort of like Donald Trump is doing the same kind of thing. You know, I'm going to take care of everything. Everything's going to be great. And I understand that, but it's really with the liberal Bernie or Buster base, the people who didn't realize you're true blue no matter who. You vote for who you want in the primary. I mean, I don't, I'm not saying every primary, but a lot of times the person I vote for in the primary didn't turn out to get the nomination, and I immediately went to the person who got the nomination. I mean, I believe I voted for Hillary the first time in L.A. in the primary against Obama, but I easily went over to Obama when she didn't win, and that's fine, and I was perfectly happy with that decision. But Bernie or Buster's refusing to vote for Hillary bothered me, because instead of saying it's next best, okay, we want Bernie, even though we thought that Bernie was gypped and the DNC was in the bag for Hillary, and maybe that was true. But even so, I still want next best, and next best is not Trump. So, and next best is certainly not Jill Stein or Gary Johnson, because they can't possibly win, and there's a whole host of crap about Jill Stein that we're not going to get into today. But why throw your vote away, or why sit on my hands at home? Because then I can't have any reasonable expectation to complain for the next 4 years. And also, I'm doing a disservice. And to act like, well, what's the difference? They're both bad. They're not equally bad. Even if you, I mean, I voted for Hillary and I thought Hillary was good. But I understand the hesitation on some people that she ran a ham-handed campaign. Maybe she was in public service too long. She did make some missteps. But if you put the side-by-side, the resumes, there's no way to me that I can say that it's six of one, half dozen of the other. That they're even lesser of two evils doesn't apply. Because there's one that's evil and there's one that maybe isn't perfect, but has done some decent work and has some flaws. And that's a big difference. So you have to say next best, and certainly would have put somebody better on the Supreme Court. That's a generational situation right there. And there are others teetering that could be retired or forced to retire. So you got to think about those things. And I said this all before the campaign, you know, during the campaign, before the election, but a lot of people just shrugged it off. And there were people in the Bernie or Buster base who were furious with the quote-unquote establishment and decided to sit on their hands and pretty much give the country the middle finger, and that's where we're at. So it's incumbent upon the electorate. It's not just the Republicans, or it's not just the people who decided to vote for Trump. It's also the people who decided not to vote for Hillary or just to stay home because we don't like our choices at all and take ourselves out of the game. Well, you're taking yourself out of the game for the foreseeable future, and you see what ramifications are coming down because elections do, in fact, have consequences, and we see it big, bold, bigly letters. I mean, that's what it is, and it can't be eradicated that easily. The climate change situation is horrible. This DACA situation is scary for so many people. So many rights, LGBTQ community will be eroded. A lot of things are being eroded right before your eyes, and there's not a lot we can do about it right now except mobilize and prepare to vote next time around, and that is the cautionary tale there. So some of the blame... Hillary has to take some of the blame for the way she ran her campaign, no question, and the choices she made leading up to it. I get it. But she's also right to acknowledge the forces that were against her, the Comey situation, the Russian collusion, the Bernie Sanders factor, and I don't think it's Bernie Sanders so much as it's Bernie Sanders supporters who just decided to sit on their hands. And that's on you. You know, that's on you. I work for some people like that on various publications who are so purist that they can't bring themselves to vote for the next best Democrat. They just rather sit it out and call everybody, oh, you're all a bunch of jerks. You're all horrible. You're all corporate hacks. You're all – well, not true. Policies would be a whole lot different under the Clinton regime than under Trump in terms of a lot of these things that we just talked about, DACA, environment, Supreme Court certainly, LGBTQ, all of these things. So this is stuff that we talked about. I talked about certainly, but enough people weren't passionate enough about it to realize that, yeah, you have to get passionate about a passionless candidate or somebody that you're not that passionate for who might actually just do the right thing. Next best. Next best. That's what I kept saying to people. Next best. So we'll see what other fallout comes from her book, but what can you do? She was gobsmacked by the loss because she knew in her gut that she was going to win. She got ready to win, and it looked like she was, and that's what I'm saying, to get too complacent. So maybe candidates should reevaluate the way they run their campaigns in the future, too, and don't get too comfy and cozy with the idea of victory, because it may not happen. Boy. Inspiration to Action Song Success Stories. Here we're running. We had such a great conversation with Joan. I'm just sort of speeding stuff up here. But Cyril, we'll do Cyril today. Cyril in Daytona, New York, not too bad, not too far from me, is working on a novel. Says, I've been on and off for a while with my writing, and the challenge put things in perspective and got me off my duff. And working again, the journaling does really help. You're so right. Thank you so much for putting it in context for me. Well, you're very welcome, Cyril. Keep at it. Please keep us posted. And a little piece of advice, journal while you're doing it if you can, because that'll help you sort of sort out, process the feelings you have about the process, about your writing, because some days are better than others. Believe me, I know. I just finished a short story the first time in a long time. My writing juices were in sync. It takes a while sometimes, and when you fall out of it a little bit, the journaling helps process those feelings. Feeling bad today, had a bad day, or, hey, had a great day. What worked, what didn't work. So keep at it and do it. I think it'll help you. It's just a suggestion. It may not, but, you know, it's something that I think does help, especially in the early stages for folks as they're getting back in the groove. If the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, and we'll give you a primer at some point again. I can't do it today because we don't have much time left but on the basics. But I will give you basics in person if you need it. If you need a creativity coaching conversation, we'll start that. If you have some evidence that it's worked for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out because we're all in this together. And you can reach out either way at the website amybetharkawy, ARKAWY.com. Easy access via that Twitter feed, or you can just Google the darn thing. You'll find me and let me know how you're doing, what's on your mind. And you can also chime in with your guest requests, big story topics that you'd like us to tackle, and, of course, your infamous Forgotten 45s. We'll get to all of those due time. You can also check out my stories. The Eliza Gordon Mysteries are all up for grabs. Killing Time, Dead Silent, and Murder, She Tweets. Yay, that's it. Among other goodies, check it out at the website. I'm getting back in the groove. Can you tell? It's AmyBethArkawy, ARKAWY.com. So among the other luminaries that we lost, I just heard last week, we don't have a song for it, but Troy Gentry died, part of Montgomery Gentry, the great country duo, tragically in a plane crash over New Jersey just last weekend. Wow. I think he was a pretty young man, too late 40s, I believe. We'll get a song on for him next time. But speaking of country and country crossover music, Len Campbell passed away, the legendary singer who publicly had that battle with Alzheimer's, and it was displayed in that phenomenal documentary. What a brave man he was in his later years. So talented, often underrated because he had a great sense of humor, but was a great musician. Also played with the Beach Boys, had kind of a crossover career. Acting, did True Grit, other movies. Best known as a showman and a singer. Had a variety show back, I think, in the 70s, too, for a time. But, oh, what a great canon of great music he had. Glenn Campbell passed away after long suffering at the age of 80. Music, it lives on. It's one of his classics. Love this one. As does Bryn and Sandy.
County, and I drive the main road, searching in the sun for another overload. I hear you singing in the wire, I can hear you through the whine, and the witches all down south won't ever stand the strain, and I need you more than want you, and I want you for all time, and the Wichita lineman is still on. Thank you.
Rhinestone Cowboy himself, the late great Gun Campbell, his signature tune, and the Jimmy Webb classic, Wichita Lineman. Rest in peace, friend. The music lives on and on. Thanks so much again to Joan Brady for joining us, the author of that fascinating book, Alger Hiss Framed. It's part history, part memoir. We'll give the details on Joan and her book when we have the podcast available, all posted for you on social media. Thanks to the TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth. ML at headquarters for keeping us going. Our new season, happy to be back in action. We'll post things for you as they become available on guests and times, etc., via social media. Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to drive safe, play nice, dream big. And I want you to come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arquie Show. We're going to leave you with one from Steely Dan featuring the late, great Walter Becker. As school's back in session, headed back to my old school. Take care, everybody. Love you all.